Hey, buddy.
Hey, what's up?
Not much. How are you doing?
Good. Hold on, I gotta send a Facebook message. I found a luckily early on in the writing process, but a comic was doing a joke that was like exactly my joke.
Yeah.
So I told him to quit or I'll fucking ban him from comedy forever. All right. What's up? This is like, what's your, this, you have a setup now. You have like a full at home.
Yeah, I have a, I would call it a part-time podcast with, Ashley Ryan at KJR. So
yeah, that's awesome. I'll admit that I haven't listened to like every episode, but I listened to a full episode.
That's nice. Thank you. You're welcome. Appreciate that. I mean, I would say when we started it out, we were very consistent, every week. Release times, release dates were consistent.
Yeah.
At this point, we're kind of all over the place. So everybody knows the key to a good podcast is consistency, and we have quickly fallen off that wagon.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's part of this hot podcast, so don't you don't think you're going to get away with saying something scandalous like that without me putting it out to the public. I'm a journalist. All right, I have the most millennial question. I want to talk about the Mariners, but I have the most millennial question for you.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you something I'm impressed with by you that I've never said before.
Oh, that's great. Is it, you've never seen me naked, so.
Yeah.
To my knowledge.
Well, you know, the pictures go around, but. They could be deep fakes.
They could be, yeah, probably.
The abs seemed unrealistic, but, you know. Dick seemed all right. Seemed about right.
Yeah, perfect. Nice medium.
So you tweet a lot during sporting events.
I do. Yeah, it's like a stream of consciousness for me.
Yeah, and what I assume is, because you'll do it when you're at a game, you'll do it when you're at home watching a game. I think maybe even when you're not watching a game, you're like watching a game cast of some type. Like you tweet a lot, and what I don't have is the ability to like constantly be bouncing back and forth my attention span or my attention to my phone and the game and keep like the thread of both.
Yeah.
Do you have like a team of people? Do you say it into the air while you're watching? Do you have like a social media team that does this for you?
No, I wish I did. That'd be great. I wouldn't want to pay anybody though. It'd have to be an unpaid intern, which I hear is super popular these days.
People like that.
Yeah. No, man. I mean, when I watch games, I think I'm like any fan in that, you know, you'll watch a game and you'll kind of have if you're really into it, you'll just kind of have your own little commentary going, you know, you'll just be saying stuff out loud and every now and then somebody else might be there to hear it. And, you know, basically if I say it out loud and it gets a laugh, I'm like, okay, maybe I should put this on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's about it. That's the way I see it.
Oh, although, you know, you're like open miking tweets. You know, people do that the opposite usually. You're using like your wife as an open mic audience for tweets.
Pretty much. Yeah. If she thinks it's funny and I know she's a funny person, then I'm like, okay, that could work. But the thing is like going back into my past, or this is the case for anybody who has Twitter or social media. You look back on the old tweets from years and years ago and you're like, God, I was way too into the Seahawks that day, or that was so stupid that I was like this up in arms about some play.
Yeah.
And so, you know, over the last couple of years, I would say my volume has gone down. I try to be more about the quality than the quantity. But back in the day, I was like Kobe out there just shooting, shooting, shooting. And eventually I'd get 30 points. You know, it's now I'm more, I try to pick and choose my moments a little bit.
You're better. Like a Sam Perkins.
Yeah, nice, big, smooth.
Yeah. So that's like, I have this thing set up where I had this thing set up like early days of TweetDeck. You could connect these things so they went to everything all at once, right?
Yeah.
So I've had like memories of Facebook. And Facebook kind of like algorithmically is worse than Twitter for live sporting events.
Yeah.
So it'll be that wasn't a fucking hold.
Yeah.
And I'm like... 11 years ago, I fucking Facebook posted. That wasn't a whole... Yeah, delete that. What are we doing?
Yeah, no.
Why was I doing that?
It's so weird. I mean, when you look back, there was such a... I don't know, there was almost like a culture around live tweeting sports. Like people would make a big deal out of it. You know, like join me for live tweeting this stupid game we're all going to watch together.
Yeah.
And no one really does that anymore. I mean, I'm sure there are some people that do, or, you know, the people covering the games, obviously, will have to do that. But it's just not, it's not as communal maybe as it used to be. The old days of Twitter or any kind of social media was more like we were all just sitting at home together in a way. Now it's like you're kind of either maybe just screaming for attention.
I think it died with Norm MacDonald, to be honest with you. He was the last guy doing it, and then he died, and now nobody does it anymore.
R.I.P. Norm.
Yeah, R.I.P. Norm. Okay, so we're like in the middle of the Seahawks season. It's amazing that we have Seahawks to talk about. So I talked to you about doing a podcast about the Mariners when, like in September. Well, like I think I said mid-September, taking for granted that they would clinch a playoff spot, which was could have very easily, as a Mariners fan, been a mistake on my part.
It almost blew up, man.
Yeah, they tried to hand it back. They ended up not having the bottom seed, though, right? Am I right about that, or am I wrong?
Yeah, they were number two out of three. They could have been one seed lower.
Yeah, which is, it felt like it was going to end up, do you remember that, like, 95? Because 95 is such a magical run, but they're like, let's not win the wild card, let's win the fucking division, and it's like the division got so bad that the wild card wasn't even in the...
Yeah, they couldn't have won the wild card. The wild card was out of the question at that point.
Yeah, that was...
Smart play on their part.
Also, like, the Mariners, we celebrate that, but that's, like, in the same way that Patriots fans love... That, like, the end of that, by the way, for everybody else in the world, the Malcolm Butler interception is maybe the most exciting end to a Super Bowl in the history. And for Seahawks fans, like, the year before, the worst Super Bowl in the history. But for Seahawks fans, it's the total inverse, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I if you were watching that game, the Seahawks-Broncos Super Bowl, with no rooting interest, I mean, I assume you were done by halftime, because that's, or at least the first play coming out of the half, because at that point, the game was in the bag, and, you know, maybe you were just watching for the commercials or something. But for us, it was great. I mean, listen, one thing I was there for 95, but I was a kid. I was 10 years old. And,
in the stadium, or you were?
I was in the stadium. We went to the games. It was incredible. I mean, I still remember it, but it's so different when you're a kid, because you don't agonize over all the bad. The one thing I learned with the Mariners playoff run this year is that you agonize on every pitch, you know, and it's so different as an adult, because you, especially as you understand the game more, like, you know what each side is trying to do, you know, each pitcher, what they're trying to do, every hitter, what they're trying to look for. And so it really, like, it just changes how you consume a game. And so, like, even thinking back to that Super Bowl, there was no agony in that Seahawks Broncos Super Bowl. You knew the game was pretty much over right away. But watching the Mariners playoffs this year, my God, I just, every day my heart hurt.
Yeah. Well, I remember, like, the Mariners probably, I think it was probably 90, no, I guess it was 2000. It wasn't 2001 for sure. I was a freshman in high school, because 2000 is the Carlos Guillen suicide squeeze to end the White Sox series, right? Yes. We watched it in school, like, it was a big thing, but we watched, like, the last inning. We didn't sit and watch. And now so many more people are working from home. Like, don't tell our employers, anybody's employers, everybody's employers, cover your ears. But, like, I was watching the game the whole time, and it was nice. The other thing is, before 95, I, like, didn't even really understand what the playoffs were. The Seahawks hadn't been in the playoffs in my memory. The Sonics were in the playoffs every year, so I was like, every basketball team goes to the playoffs. It's not that far from the truth. And then there's no such thing as baseball playoffs. There's just a World Series. And football also, it's like there's just a Super Bowl. I didn't watch because I was like 9 years old when 95 happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess what is your – that's interesting that you feel more emotionally tied to this version of it, though, because I got it. My experiences as a kid and a very busy – or as a kid, as a person with a kid, as a dad and a very busy person, I'm like the exact sports fan that I used to hate, the, like, turn it on at the playoffs, like, really, really focus in at the playoffs guy.
Yeah. You're right though. You're super busy. You travel a lot. It's probably a lot tougher for you to watch a game. For me, it's like you were saying, I work from home. So, I mean, when those games are on in the middle of the day, I can turn them on and sure. still technically be working, you know, sure. answer a few emails here or there. I'm not taking any meetings, but you know, I'm not traveling. So it's easy for me to tune into a game whenever I want to, you know. I was kind of surprised, honestly, with the Mariners this year. Like, they were always my favorite team growing up as a kid. And, you know, I liked all the Seattle teams as a kid. I liked the Sonics were probably number two, and then the Huskies and Seahawks were kind of in football wasn't as big to me as a kid.
Gotcha.
But I really hadn't felt super passionately about a team until the Mariners this year, and they made the playoffs again, just maybe because it was been 21 years, you know.
Yeah.
But even in thinking about like the Seahawks rise and, you know, even the Husky football team having a little bit here and there over the past few years, you know, I'd get into those games and I'd be happy to, I'd go to some and I was happy to be there, but it was nothing like watching the Mariners pitch by pitch try to, you know, first take down the Blue Jays and then the Astros. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think baseball is probably the sport I know the best because I played it at a high enough level that I kind of understand what's going on.
What is that level?
High school varsity. I mean, not.
Sure. Gotcha. Same. I'm in the same boat.
Yeah, exactly. No, I feel like we are the exact median of people when you're like, you don't know what the game is like, that type of person. We're like right in the middle. Like everybody above us, they can say that. Everybody below us cannot. And then there's us in the middle. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I had a guy the other day. The other day I was watching a Mariners game complaining about the umpires, and a guy whose name, by the way, was Ichiroshima something on, it was like Ichiroshima 69 or something, which, by the way, I know he's just associating Ichiro with something Japanese, but Hiroshima's not like a, like, people in Japan aren't thrilled with that reference, right?
Yeah, that's probably not, no.
And it did, of course, end with him calling me the R word at the end.
Wow.
I knew it was going to. He kept calling me baby brained, and I was like, that's like, we're like one step away.
Wait, so it's what, like, was his argument? What was he upset about?
So I was saying that we need robot umps, and he's like, well, you obviously never played baseball. And I'm like, well, I did for a long time. I actually played a little bit after high school. I played in the Puget Sound Senior Baseball League, and I was like, you know, whatever. It's actually, you know what's funny is they told us that that's technically semi-pro. I don't bring that up, but you pay to play. It's not, I wasn't getting paid to play.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know the league you're talking about. I wanted to join that as a full team, but they wouldn't let me and my friends do that. You had to go in as a single free agent, which it's like, no thanks.
Yeah, you had to get drafted. Yeah, we had a guy on my team though that played double A and a bunch of guys that played college. Like, we had good players on the team, and I was like in the bottom half of that team. I think they drafted me thinking I'd be in the top half, and then turns out that my genetics don't allow me to be athletic past the age of 18. Anyway, I was like, yeah, I played for a while, and because I think that I just want the strike zone to be the strike zone. I want it to be like consistent. Yeah. Everyone knows what it is. We can be mad, but they can change it. They can make small incremental changes to it if it's electronic. But when it's different night to night, it's insane. So anyways, this guy called me a, what did I say, a baby brain?
Baby brain.
That's
a pretty good insult, man.
It's pretty good.
I respect that. It's not like, it's not going to get you fired from your job.
Yeah.
It's not like so off color that it's going to get you in any kind of trouble. And it kind of hurts. I mean, it kind of hurts.
Well, I knew, because what he meant was, and I'm saying R word, if we were in person, I would certainly not be censoring this, but you have a job where people might, you know, you might get fired for being associated with someone using the actual R word.
You know, this is kind of off topic, but I was in a meeting at work the other day, and one of my coworkers used that word by accident, just kind of like let it slip.
Sure.
And like 10 seconds later was like, stopped themselves and was like, oh my God, I probably shouldn't have said that. And it is like the last person I would have expected to use it to. So.
Well, that's kind of the thing. That's the myth of it all, right? Is like when we're not on Zoom with coworkers who might, like, we're all dirty scoundrels with language. I mean, maybe not you, Alex. You're a perfect beacon
I'm
of morality, but yeah. You're like Jeff Hornacek in the fucking 90s.
I had a Jeff Hornacek jersey growing up, so yeah, that all adds up. I really did. Yeah, it was like the $10 clearance special at the Champion store. So,
gotcha. But yeah, I knew. I was like, oh, he's saying baby brain, and it means that other thing. But then when he just did it, and then the other funny thing he did was he did all this in my replies. He doesn't follow me. I don't know how he found this tweet. It's probably looking for like the Robot Umps hashtag to argue
just
with somebody.
Just going after people.
Yeah, and he was a Mariners fan too, and I'm like, we like the same team. Like, we probably have like a 90% overlap in the same sports opinions, but this thing that you've clearly not thought out well was, anyways, but then he did this thing that made me laugh so much. So he does this all in my replies, so none of his 13 followers can see it at all, that it happens, right? And then he does like an end of the thread, exasperated, like, can't believe this guy, that nobody can see what he's talking about on his regular timeline because it's all hidden because he's replying to me. And so unless they follow both of us, which I looked, we had zero mutual followers. Yeah. He's just, and of course, zero engagement, but it made me laugh really hard. That I was like, at the beginning of this thing, I'm like, this dude's going to call me a slur by the end of this. I have no doubt. And then he fucking punctuated the entire exchange.
Through. Yeah. Yeah, that honestly, like, that's probably I don't know. I go back and forth about social media with sports because of this. And I've gotten to the point in my life where when I do tweet, like, I would say probably 90% of my tweets are just like sarcastic jokes. That's mm-hmm. it. Because it's hard to get people real. I mean, every now and then people will take your jokes literally. And then, of course, when they do that, they're all upset.
Well, that's the dream.
Yeah,
usually,
no,
right?
It happens all the time. And I generally do not engage with those people because it's like, if you don't understand that this is a joke, me engaging with you is certainly not going to help the situation. It's just going to be pouring fuel on the fire you are starting to burn. But you know, those types of topics are like the reason why social media even exists, you know, mm-hmm. the barroom banter, things like robot umps and stuff like that. And they are divisive topics, but to be that passionate about it as this guy was, it's like, dude, you might need to reevaluate things if you're getting this mad about umpires.
I know. Well, and I'm doing it like, so it's funny you say, so you and I have both, you to a much more successful degree, have attempted to be pseudo sports journalists at points in our lives.
That's true.
I think, maybe made a more sincere attempt at being a real sports journalist at one point. And then we both had blogs. And so there was a point where on Twitter I was trying to actually have like real opinions. But the beauty of jokes is, even if somebody disagrees with you, and I guess the difference between what you're doing and what I'm doing is, if somebody takes my joke opinion as serious, I will retweet it, and like, the engagement is the fun part, right? Is the dream is when someone takes it seriously, and then you engage them in a serious, like, that's funny if everyone else is in on it. And I also get how that could be like, there was a dude, a Seattle sports guy that I used to get into arguments with online. And I remember I was like, this guy's clearly dumb and a troll.
Yeah.
And I would be like at Costco with my wife on a BlackBerry trying to like tweet back at him, you know, like my body temperature's dropping and I'm like, this is the stupidest. This is like a horrible use of my time.
Yeah, no, I think we've all been there. And that's, you know, that's part of the reason why I've just really leaned into like the grab ass, because I don't like, over the years, I've always been very, I feel like me personally, and I am distant from my Twitter personality, at least I try to be. But there was definitely a period of time there where those two things intertwined more than they do now. Now, I mean, you know, you have to kind of cultivate the air of grab ass, right? Like, you have to have, like, you as a stand-up comic probably understand this better than most, but for me, I'm not a comedian. So, you know, you could put like comedian in your bio, and then that's kind of like it's kind of like a fail safe. If a joke goes terribly bad, you can say it was a joke.
Yes.
I screwed it up. They're not all home runs, you know, and people will just be like, all right, whatever, man. If you're not a comedian by trade, but you're trying to be funny, like, the majority of people strike out at that. You mm-hmm. cannot, it's not easy to be funny. So you have to have enough hits that when you do miss, you don't get, you know, people say, might say canceled, or you don't have the whole society turn on you for yeah. one bad joke. You know, I think these are important things.
I'm allowed a little more absurdity for sure, I think, than you would be. But also, I think that that comes with fewer followers and people who are interested in my sports takes. I've given up on that basically completely. The idea of like people caring about my sports opinions on Twitter. So now it's just like, let's talk about the size of Antonio Brown's dick, you know, like that's fine. Let's do it. Like, I don't need to talk about the morality. Like, let's just talk about how the rendering time on blurring those videos had to be huge. Cause that fucking, the blurring effect was enormous. The amount of screen that took up had to be just ridiculous.
But people like that stuff too. I mean, not specifically Antonio Brown's.
No, there are some people that like it.
But there probably are. But I think just, you know, social media, especially Twitter, can be so divisive and just full of bad news. Mm-hmm. And when we all probably do it to some degree. You wake up in the morning, you start going through your phone, and some days are better than others. But a lot of times you're just reading about the impending doom that, you know, belies all of us in this world. So if you see some kind of stupid commentary here and there, it can really just change your mood. Even, you know, people want to see positive stuff too. I mean, like, you know, I feel like the things that I've ever posted that have been the most popular and most engaged with have just been like, they're not sarcastic, they're not jokes, they're not negative in any way, they're actually like very positive things. And people are just like, they're desperate for things like that.
Yeah,
and,
well, I would say like your Twitter persona is probably a little leaning towards like nihilistic.
yeah, that's probably a good word for it.
But you posted a video. I didn't like, this is after we even talked about doing a podcast, but you posted a video that I believe is, I think you said is where your dad works on the.
Yeah, it's he has a retirement job where he drives cars for a car dealership in Seattle. And he had got this surveillance video footage of all these guys celebrating the Mariners playoff victory.
So he's not in the video.
He's not in the video. No, gotcha, it's four younger guys that he works with. But I posted it online and it went crazy. I mean, it was of all the things I've ever posted on Twitter, this was the first and really only time that something has gone viral.
Gone like, truly viral. Because, I was like, I saw it and I was like, what the fuck is this? And then and you said watch to the end, and it's like, it was like very cool and very fun and like very organic and not staged, not contrived in any way. It's just like, and also like, I think to talk about how like it's been brutal to be a Mariners fan. The dudes in that video, I don't know how old they all are, but they're all, I think most of them were younger than me.
Yeah. And most of them were in their 20s, I think. Three of them were in their 20s.
So I'm like, I was like, I guess I would have been 2001. I was 15 the last time the Mariners made the playoffs.
Yeah.
So these dudes were like maybe 5 or something like that, or like pre solid memories. And so that's like, I was thinking about that when I saw that video. There's like a full generation of kids that never even got a chance really to care about the Mariners.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising that so many people, you know, jump back on the bandwagon so quickly with this team. But I think a lot of people, because of just, you know, the Mariners being good when we were kids in our generation for that brief period of time. Yeah. I think there's so many people that
it's like, it's funny because you think of that as like almost for Seattle, that's like a dynastic team. And it was like 6 years of being a playoff contender, never being in the World Series, never really even threatening winning an ALCS.
Yeah, it's crazy that 4 playoff appearances in 6 years was enough to be a dynasty. But there's so many people that like grew up with family members or friends that were probably huge Mariner fans, and that was probably their avenue into this team. Plus, there's the lovable loser theory, you know, like you've seen over the years with like the Cubs and the Red Sox, teams that just they become popular because they suck so bad. I mean, even just a couple years ago, it was the Cleveland Browns, you know, like that was another team that like they'd been down for so long that people were just like enamored by it.
And luckily they've only become more and more likable since then.
they find a way to make things worse for themselves. But there is camaraderie and misery to a degree, mm-hmm. you know, and if you are a fan of a bad team, it really probably bonds you to other fans more than being a fan of a good team would. You know, it's easy to take for granted the good times, but when all the times are bad and then they finally kind of turn a corner, that's when you get like a video like the one that I had posted where these guys are having just an incredibly organic reaction to something very positive. And when you think about just like social media today, and I kind of got this impression just from reading some of the replies to this video, there's so much like curated content now, mm-hmm. you know, like if you're on Instagram or if you're younger than us, probably, and on TikTok, everything is staged. I mean, everything, mm-hmm. everybody thinks that they are Spielberg now.
It's and a challenge.
It seriously is. So
it's like everything is like, it's the do the Mariners dance in a dealership challenge. And then
there's exactly.
one person that did it organically. And then there's 75 people doing the exact same thing.
Right. And they're staging it. Yeah. So I think it's refreshing for people to see something that they know was not put together by somebody looking for clout, you know, right. like somebody who was trying to capitalize on a moment, because there's so much of that. I think that's another reason why you have an entire generation of people that might jump on board a team's bandwagon when they're doing well, is because there is an opportunity for some clout there mm-hmm. that you wouldn't have had, you know, 10 or 20 years ago.
So I know you've met these people like, incidentally, but have you ever met someone? I used to work with this dude that he would like Florida would win the college football or a college basketball championship, and he'd be like, he'd just have a Florida hoodie the next week, and I'm like, what are you like? You're like a Florida fan, like life. And he's like, no, I like them because they just won. He's from the Philippines, so like he doesn't have any like geographical connection to any team in the U.S. And he's like, no, of course, like they're the best team. That's why I bought the sweatshirt. What are you, stupid? Yeah. I was like, oh, that's actually like probably a way more fun life to live than just like slugging it out every year with a dog shit baseball team, you know?
Yeah, man, I used to get real. I think it was when the Seahawks were pretty good. I would get up in arms about those types of people. And I think a lot of people around here did.
Are you the originator or just the most high profile proliferator of the 12 since 12 hashtag?
I'm the originator of that.
Oh, man.
But I don't know. I'm sure there's probably somebody else out there that would probably try to lay claim to it, too.
Sure.
But I, as far as I know, I was the very first person to
Some
do that.
Baby brain out there trying Some to take credit.
Some baby brain, yes. man, yeah, I would just – at first it was kind of just a running joke. You know, I think when the Seahawks went to the Super Bowl that first year and then, you know, obviously back-to-back years of going to the Super Bowl – the joke was that everybody was suddenly a Seahawks fan, but not just everybody. It was like every company, right? Like every company in the Seattle area, they'd hang their Seahawks flags. Every Friday you'd see on Facebook all these people taking pictures with all their coworkers in their Seahawks gear. And I was just, you know, for people that, like you and I, who grew up around here, lived our whole lives here, and were fans of these teams, there was nothing like that with these teams before.
Yeah.
So you had all these people that were just like Seattle transplants that all of a sudden were like claiming to be lifelong fans of these teams. That I think when you live in a part of the country like Washington, where it does kind of feel like you're part of a community, even in this entire state or mm-hmm. even in the entire Pacific Northwest region, when people start to infiltrate that and kind of like take it, I kind of liken it to the people that like all of a sudden about 5 years ago decided hiking was the coolest thing in the entire world. It's like it rains here 75% of the time.
Yeah.
It's not fun to hike in the rain. I've done it before. It sucks. But you just want to go up there and take the picture in your flannel and your beanie, you know, and post it on Instagram. It's like, we don't actually all think hiking's that cool, do we? It's just, it's a popular thing to do on social media.
It's so weird as adults. I remember what I've always likened it to is when I was in like middle school, kids would go, they'd be like, 7th grade, this kid's like a hip-hop kid. This kid loves hip-hop. Yeah. And then he goes away for summer, comes back, and he's got like too much gel in his hair and a Slipknot t-shirt and a ball necklace and claims rap is garbage. And I'm like, who the – like what – and listen, when you're in 7th to 8th grade, that's like I'll accept it because you're stupid and hormonal and impressionable. But when you're 41 years old and you're making that kind of personality transformation – I just don't respect it. I can't respect it.
Yeah, like I said, I used to get really up in arms about it. It doesn't bother me as much anymore. I never begrudge kids about it. I think about, like, our childhoods in the 90s. It's like we were wearing Chicago Bulls stuff. Sure. Charlotte Hornets were really popular. They weren't even that good, but everyone liked the colors. You know, yeah. Like, there's certain things as a kid you always just gravitate to. As an adult, it is a little different. But I think, you know, with sports as a whole, everyone's just looking for a community. And I don't like soccer at all, but the Sounders are a really good example of that. All of a sudden, you know, all these fat middle-aged guys who'd never played any sport in their life.
How dare you?
Sorry, this is triggering, I know. All these guys who were non-athletes were suddenly the world's biggest soccer fans because of the Sounders. And I over the years, I'd think about that and, like, why that became a thing. And I think it's just because you want that community. You know, you want to be able to say, oh, I've got a buddy that I go to games with, or we talk about this team with. And I think for people like you and me, you know, having grown up playing sports our whole lives, you naturally have that. You're always around guys that you can talk to about sports or baseball or whatever it is. But if you never played sports as a kid, or you moved around a lot, you moved to a new city, it's really hard to find that community. I guess that's the one thing I've kind of learned, and so I don't get too worked up about it anymore. Plus, we have a new team. You know, we got the Kraken now too. So it's like anytime you got a new team, that kind of just evolves all these new fans out of thin air.
Yeah, I have this philosophy on bandwagon fans, that bandwagon fans are actually the real motivation for teams to be good. And I derive this from, I'm also a Cubs fan. That's like you and I have the same exact overlapping fan bases, except for you were apparently a Charlotte Hornets and Chicago Bulls fan, and I like the Cubs. And the Cubs, in my opinion, they could be bad, they could be good, they're selling out every game, right? That's not my opinion, that's the reality. And the Mariners, I remember when David Locke was in Seattle, he said this thing, he's like, honestly, my understanding is the Mariners are most interested in $90 million payroll, 90 wins, and like whatever, selling 4 million tickets or whatever it is in a year.
Yeah.
And that's all they really care about. They don't really care about winning, they just want to stay good enough to keep fans interested. And I think when you take away that incentive for a team, it's like they, like the Cubs, I don't know how motivated they were to win, because they're not going to make more money.
Yeah.
They're not going to sell more tickets anyway if they win. So like to go all out, and they're just potentially costing themselves money. And I kind of felt that way with the Mariners. And then obviously, like after 2001, there were a couple teams that flirted with the playoffs. But it really took this like full scale rebuild and spend some money to do this, which is like, this is, I mean, there's people like me who've been crying for this since like 2005. and even I'm not in love with everything that happened, but it ultimately ended. And also, I'm going to go out on record and say this. I was wrong about Julio Rodriguez. I would look at like the scouting reports and his stats in the minor leagues, and I'd be like, this dude is going to be like a fourth outfielder. And that dude has turned into like a true fucking star. I was wrong.
I mean, it's fair to be wrong about a Mariners prospect.
True.
If you get your hopes up about a Mariners prospect, 9 times out of 10, they're just going to let you down. Julio's the first one that I feel like there was hype around him for sure. But
it felt too early even. You're like, this guy's in single A. Like, he's 18 years old. What are you doing? You're going to ruin him.
As a fan, you barely had time to get real hyped about him because he never spent any time in AAA. He just outright made the club. It's kind of very Griffey-esque. I mean, obviously, we were probably too young to remember when Griffey came up, and I'm sure a lot of people were. But, you know, just anytime you breeze through the minors like that and suddenly you're on an opening day roster,
Alex Rodriguez making his debut, though. And that's what it reminded me of, is like I was sitting in my Uncle Tim's house watching this game and then watched him, and I was like, I didn't understand prospect development. So I'm like, this dude's not that good. Like, because his short rookie year or whatever.
Yeah, he came up in 94 and he like played a little bit. He wasn't very good. And then he kind of like went back and forth in 95 between majors and minors. It took him like 2 years to get going. Something like what Julio did this year is you don't see it very often. I mean, even knowing what I know about Griffey, I mean, 1989, he comes up, he makes the opening day roster, but then he gets hurt for most of the year. He's out for a lot of the year. So that really kind of like puts a damper on what he would ultimately become. You know, there's kind of like this 1 year delay on it. Mm-hmm. Julio, I mean, he had that first month where he was kind of struggling, but then all of a sudden, you know, you can tell this guy's the real deal. And you just don't see that very often. You certainly don't see it from the Mariners.
Yeah. I
mean, there's just no one could have anticipated that was going to happen. That's like a once in a generation thing. I mean, you can, there's only a handful of active Major League Baseball players right now who have started their careers the way Julio Rodriguez did this year. And that's really cool to see. I mean, it, you can tell, I mean, even before the team really got like really got going towards the end of the year and fans started coming out of the woodwork, throughout the season, people were excited about Julio, even if they weren't the world's biggest Mariners fan. And so when you have a guy like that, who's just like so easily the face of your franchise, and mm-hmm. he's homegrown, you know, you didn't have to go out and trade for him or sign him like you did with Robinson Cano. You didn't have to pay him yep. a ton of money and throw all these expectations on him. This guy just kind of like organically grew up through your system. He's on a rookie contract. Whatever he gives you is kind of a bonus. And then to be one of the top, you know, 10, 20 players in Major League Baseball on top of that, I mean, my God, that's like everything every team ever dreams of in any sport, yeah. not just baseball, in any sport.
Well, and even like the other thing about him is he's incredibly young, but also he comes from the like Latin America, which means he's been with the organization since he was 16. And feel how you want about that. That we've had a long time to kind of get to know him and anticipate him, where like if you drafted a guy high, maybe he's 22 years old when he gets to your, he's going to be 24. And I feel like he's like kind of, there's probably, that's probably part of the reason why these guys in their 20s. I remember sitting at a game in 2005, maybe 2004. And it was 2004 because I think Felix made, did Felix make his debut? No, I think it was 2007. I'm sorry.
No, I think you're right. He made his debut in like 04, 05.
He was 2 months older than me. I think he turned 18 in 2004.
Yeah.
I turned 18 in 2004. And then, but when I was 21, I went to Safeco and I saw him pitch. And he's 21 also.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's insane to me that this dude is, he's my age. He's like 2 months younger than, or 2 months older than me. Yeah. And, but that could have been, I also had that moment when I was 25 and I'd be like, this guy is 5 years younger than me. And now you have the thing where you're like, I'm older than almost every athlete playing yeah. professional sports at this point. You know?
Yeah, we need Justin Verlander to stick around. Yeah, for
please,
a few
Justin
more.
Verlander.
Now that Pujols is leaving, that's not good for us. Yeah, there's not too many.
I know all the 50-year-olds got to be real upset that Pujols is leaving.
That is one of those things you do throughout the course of your lifetime, though. You kind of compare, especially if you played the sport that you're mm-hmm. a fan of. You compare yourself. Like, I know I'm the same age as LeBron. And as you can tell, we have a lot in common. Yeah. So, of course, I'm comparing myself to him always. No, it's just one of those weird things. That
he compares himself to you. I saw him do an interview about it.
That makes sense. You know, I can understand that. We have the
Alex
same
Akita,
hair.
Pretty good abs. Medium penis.
Medium penis.
Well,
yeah,
we have a
podcast title. That's a good title. Yeah, run with that. That's better than I would usually get, so... no, you do that, man. And I think when you have a young superstar like Julio, what you're going to see is like what you were saying with Felix, is you're going to have kids who are teenagers that are like, I can relate to this guy because he's close to me in age. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember doing this thing when I had a paper out in middle school and I'd be walking around and delivering papers in the rain every single day and it sucked. And so you have a lot of time to just think. And I would think to myself, you know, Ryan Anderson and Gilmesh and Freddie Garcia, they're still young enough that if I make the Mariners one day, I could be in the same rotation as them. You know, stupid stuff like that. It's like, yeah. That's so, like, no one's telling you that's a terrible, that's never going to happen. You
yeah.
know, like, it's a pie in the sky dream. But it's the type of thing you think about when you're a kid, you know, just putting yourself in that framework. So if you're a 13-year-old kid who plays baseball in the Seattle area and you see Julio Rodriguez, you're like, man, if everything goes the way I hope it does, I could be his teammate one day. At the same time, you have people like us who are 15, 20 years older than Julio Rodriguez that are still enamored by the way that he plays the game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the fact that you're a young superstar, it has this wide ranging, you know, demographic of people that will want to be just watching you do what you do, you know, and that's a cool thing.
Mine was, I was like, well, you know what I could do is just lift a bunch of weights and then I could be Brett Boone. And it turns out That's almost true. Like, if you just lift a bunch of weights and inject steroids into your body.
You have to take a few trips to Mexico in between, pick up some things, come back, you'll be good.
What's been the most brutal defeat of the Mariners, like, end to a season disappointment since 2001 for you? I know there was, like, the year they traded... It was the year before they traded for Cliff Lee. They were, like, unexpectedly good. That's what it kind of pushed the timeline forward for Jack Zarenczyk. For me, that was probably the one. And then they signed Sean Figgins. They trade for Cliff Lee. End up having to trade Cliff Lee later. Never make the playoffs with Cliff Lee. What was the – do you remember a season that was particularly heartbreaking?
I do. You're right, though. I mean, it was really tough for most people to care by June in most of the seasons in the 21-year drought because, you know, you'd be out of it so quickly. And even if you had high expectations going into a season like you did when Cliff Lee got signed or traded for, when they signed Sean Figgins, guys like that, most of those signings just disappointed early. You know, the one that stands out to me is 2014 when they lost on the last day of the season. And they had a shot, you know, if they win their last game, and I think it was the A's, if they lose that day, the Mariners actually make the playoffs or force a tie to like a one-game playoff or something like that. Either way, they're playing more. And, of course, we all know how that – you kind of knew going in. I remember going to the game that day and not even thinking they had a chance. You know, and I think it was like, and Felix was pitching that day, you know, they basically had everything lined up perfectly, very fortuitously for them. You got your best pitcher on the mound. All you got to do is win this game, but you also need someone else's help. You need the A's to lose on top of that. And of course, you know, we get three quarters of the way through the Mariner game. The A's win their game. It doesn't even matter. You know, whatever happens the rest of that game. And then that was, for a lot of Mariner fans, it's kind of an iconic image of Tom Wilhelms and dancing in front of the dugout. And it was like, you know, whatever, man. At the time, it really bothered me. I was like, man, we didn't accomplish what everyone came here to see you accomplish. The only reason this stadium was full today is because you had an opportunity to go to the playoffs, which has not happened very often in a long time. And you're out here celebrating like you won. I hated that. But I get it, man. It's a long season for these guys, and they exceeded expectations that year. But for me, it was kind of a heartbreak overall.
I'm going to give you before we go, a couple dark horse picks for that, which are the years before the drafts of, I think it was Dustin Ackley and Danny Holton. Strasburg goes number one overall. Yeah. The Mariners were flirting with the worst record in the league, could have had the first overall pick. And I think similarly, the year Bryce Harper got drafted, they were flirting with it and ended up with Danny Holton. Although I could have those wrong in my mind. In my mind, Bryce Harper and Danny Holton should have been Mariners, and they both ended up in Washington. And also, yeah. So those seasons, those are like obviously not where you're close to making the playoffs, but close to maybe doing something good for the franchise. And you can't even, this team that's a perennial loser can't even lose right.
The Strasburg Ackley year was by far the worst because they came into that last series and all they had to do was lose one game in the series and they would have locked up the number one pick. And that was one of those years where like Strasburg is being treated like LeBron, clear cut number one. No doubt about it. After that, it's just, you know, everyone else might be the same, too.
He's a little more Greg Oden, it turns out.
Yeah. He was good for a few years there. He's definitely better than Dustin Ackley, I guess. But that, and then, of course, they go and sweep the series. You know, they win the. It's like at that point, you almost expect some intervention from the front office, right? Like, and the fact that they just let these players do their thing and be like, look, I'd get in the manager's ear and be like, man, none of this matters. All you have to do is lose one. I'm not saying lose them all.
Yeah,
just lose one.
Lose the first one, then have fun the last two. Yeah, win, play, you know, go all out. Suicide squeeze.
Oh, it was just. I mean, it was the most Mariner. It was the most Mariner thing that possibly could have happened. They literally, in the midst of their tanking, still somehow didn't tank well enough. Incredible.
Right. I'm gonna stop recording.